You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Allegiance. I'm Mark from Hampshire.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska, where the Cornhuskers are playing in 18 minutes and I forgot to set the DVR.
Oh dear.
Is it going to be a short one today, then?
No, it's not going to be that short. Actually, I'm just going to ask you guys right now if I can step out for a minute or two.
You can step out for a minute and set the DVR to it.
Okay, so now if you guys keep going, why don't you two talk about the new Star Trek series? I know, James, you said you wanted to, so I'll let you two talk about that. I'll go set the DVR, and we'll keep this whole thing in. How's that?
Okay, yeah,
go
sure,
for it. Absolutely. All right. And then I'll be surprised at what you say when I edit it.
Okay, excellent. That would be a treat.
Okay, hold on.
James, now, new Star Trek series.
Yeah, it was about a week ago when I saw a tweet that you had put out there. Saying new Star Trek series.
Holy crap, I believe. New Star Trek series, yeah.
Is that right? Because I heard it through the social media.
I did as well. Awesome. I'm very, very excited and very optimistic. I'm not one of those people, and you know the people. Those guilty on Twitter going, oh, it's Kurtzman, oh, it's going to be awful, oh, it's going to be crap, it's going to be the JJ-verse, they're going to destroy Star Trek. You know all of those people, don't you? We all know who those people are. Those particular faces who show up on social media and like to crap all over everything. But I'm really, really excited and I'm really optimistic about it. I think they're going to pull out all of the stops for this. I know it's going to be on this CBS all-access streaming thingy.
Personally, I think that's more or less irrelevant. I think the only thing that does is that because they're trying to launch kind of like Star Trek as a big ticket item on this thing, if this thing happens to tank, I suppose there's a chance it takes down the series with it. But realistically, I think it eventually is going to end up on networks and in syndication and on DVD, and it will eventually get out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I was thinking about the international distribution rights. So there's a CBS channel. I've got Sky TV, and there's a CBS channel on there. So I'm wondering if it'll just show up on there. We don't know yet. I mean, if I've got to pay £5 a month or £6 a month just for this CB access thing, and I only ever watch Star Trek, it's money well spent, in my opinion.
So what they'll do, they'll just, outside of the US, they'll sell it to the highest bidder, almost certainly.
Yeah, and I'm sure Sky will pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, if it's Sky, then it'll be Sky. I don't think it's going to be on like CBS Action or anything, like that. So for the first run, it'll be picked up by I don't want to say serious network, but a network that is able to fund it to give them money for it, rather than it just going out on their own little, internally owned network. So let me ask you a question then.
Sure.
Is it JJ-verse? Is it original universe? Does it matter? Is it a third kind of reincarnation?
I don't think we need a third universe. I don't know. Will they go for JJ-verse, but on a different ship, so occurring alongside Kirk and Spock? I don't think they will. To be honest, for my mind, Star Trek's always about going forward and not backwards. And I think that was one of the reasons why Enterprise wasn't a success. I mean, I do still like Enterprise, but I think overall it's the weakest Star Trek series by quite a long way. I want to see it going forward. So I think I'm going to go for 25th century, 50 to 100 years after the Prime Universe. It could happen in the JJ verse, but in the 25th century, by which point they could sort of meld the timelines together, and much of what happened over the sort of intervening few centuries wouldn't make too much of a difference. So it could almost be like the Prime Universe, if you see what I mean by that.
No, no, sure. If you're going that far in the future, right, you know, the events of the past more or less irrelevant anyway, right? Mm. Now, I have to say, I think, you know, my instinct as well is to go kind of into the future. I don't think you necessarily need to go kind of like another 50 years, but what I think was happening towards the end of Voyager and, you know, and actually the whole reason why DS9 was on a space station to one side and the whole reason why Voyager was shipped out to the middle of nowhere was, you know, after a while, it gets very claustrophobic doing, you know, 20 years worth of stories within the same kind of time frame. And what we've had 15 years off. And if you even just go forward on normal time, I think a lot can be changed, and you can have better storytelling opportunities within the original universe without having to bump into all this canon that has existed around.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah,
you know, so no, just think how different is the world today than it was in 2000, and you could easily suggest that the same things would apply in the in the TNG era.
Yeah, or even accelerated even more, because the pace of technological advancement sort of accelerates over time, doesn't it? So 15 years would be more like 50 now, I guess.
Yeah, and yeah. I think one thing that I'm so I don't think they're going to go JJ-verse because it's kind of like a different entity that owns it on TV, than owns it in the movies. And they are more than tied into the original universe. My call on this, though, is that if they do 20 years into the future, or if they do effectively what they're doing with Star Wars, which is that they just let time go on, you have, you know, 60 or so actors hanging around that are more than happy to make appearances and, you know, see where their characters have ended up 25 years down the line or 15 years down the line or whatever. And to the extent that there are some kind of like Star Trek fans at the helm of this, I would find the questions such as, you know, whatever happened to O'Brien or whatever happened to Bashir, whatever happened to, you know, did Sisko come back? All of those are very tempting to have in your back pocket as an option.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Yeah.
Even if you don't go into it wanting to do that, if you have that possibly to be able to, you know, trump, you can trump about Picard and Beverly's, you know, honeymoon or whatever. It gives you flexibility, even if it's a little bit like heavy-handed fan service.
No, I agree. That would be cool because we could have, Captain Riker show up with, Deanna Troi. And, yeah, that could be interesting. No, but I think I'd personally go for Prime Universe a little bit in the future. I heard some people say, oh, it should tie in with Star Trek Online. No, don't do that. Don't do that. I know that's set in the early 25th century, and it's all quite interesting from what I understand of the Star Trek Online timeline. I mean, I don't play Star Trek Online. I did try it a couple of times, but just couldn't get into it. But don't tie it in with that. It's not canon, being the canon police, but early 25th century would be good for me. I think move forward into the future. Let's have a new ship. Probably won't be an Enterprise, but I don't care. Let's have some really cool and interesting aliens. Let's have some good exploration stories. Let's have a good story arc. It's probably going to be there's been a lot of speculation. I think most people would think it's probably going to be a 10 to 12 episode season, which is sort of what they tend to do these days. I'm happy with that, as long as it's all awesome and not filler, which you sometimes get with a 26 episode season.
Now, here's the thing: I had a discussion with Furbob and Sean on Sci-Fi Waffle last
week.
Yes,
I listened to that a couple of days ago. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Well, the call that I make and the call that I'm kind of standing by is that, you know, this is pretty much first series of Star Trek that's not hitting kind of network or syndicated television.
Yeah.
And the fact is that nowadays, I was thinking, I can't think of a popular show that's PG like Star Trek used to be. So if you're thinking House of Cards, Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, all of the big ones out there. So I'm thinking R-rated Star Trek, here we come.
I think,
for want of a better choice of words,
R-rated and not blatant. Not blatant, full frontal nudity or anything. But I think something a little bit more adult. I'd agree. I mean, I heard you say that, and I thought that's a really good call. And I'm not necessarily opposed to that, because I enjoy things like, I loved Breaking Bad. Things like Game of Thrones, wasn't so much into it, but I understand why people do like it. And House of Cards, yeah, let's have something a little bit more adult. I don't have any objection to that. My kids aren't into Star Trek too much anyway, so I wouldn't be worried too much about them missing it if it was a little bit more adult thing.
I think, I think at least critically, the big series that in sci-fi days that was launched alongside Enterprise was, Battlestar, and obviously Battlestar was itself kind of much more targeted at a different demographic than your, than your family watching.
Yeah, and Battlestar was amazing. So
we'll have to wait and see. I'm extremely enthusiastic to it. There's no chance in the world that I'm not going to watch it. They could get at least $6 an episode out of me if they needed to.
Exactly.
They've got me over a barrel. I might as well just give them the pin to my bank. Tell me what they need. It's all good. It really is.
How much is this going to cost? If it costs me £10 a month, okay, so let's translate that up. And we always get ripped off in the UK. If it costs me £10 a month, so that's about, $16, Lou, I'll pay that because it's £2.50. It's a price of a cheap cup of coffee per episode. It's new Star Trek. I'll pay that money.
Of course.
Just shut up and take my money.
Do you guys remember Year of Hell?
Absolutely. And the Voyager episode.
Yeah.
What about this Star Trek Restore? Could they? You think they could take a whole season to try and restore the timeline that JJ screwed up?
That's an interesting idea. I often wondered if they were going to do that at the end of the third movie, but now it looks like there could be a fourth movie. I did often wonder if they would try and somehow hook it all back up so that it all got repaired. But I don't think they're going to do that in Star Trek Beyond. And there are rumors, or so I don't think it's actually confirmed yet that there will be a fourth movie. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how that fourth movie goes on alongside the new TV series. And I heard people talking about, will it confuse fans? Of course it won't confuse fans. People aren't that stupid. I think that's insulting to the viewers to think that they would confuse a TV series with movies.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm right, we had three TOS films come out during the run of TNG. Either three, or there was two, and there was one very close. I thought Voyage Home, Final Frontier, and Undiscovered Country.
Voyage Home was 86, and it was very successful.
So it would have been very close, at least.
TNG. Yeah, very close. So then we had, the Final Frontier, and
with the same sets.
Yeah, and Undiscovered Country. With the same sets, yeah. And the Undiscovered Country as well.
But something that I didn't notice at the time, and I was only kind of looking at retrospect, and apparently this was so. I didn't realize that Spock was in reunification, or unification, I should say, it effectively in order to promote or to make awareness of Undiscovered Country. Because I was not into the films at that point. But he effectively turned up like a couple of months before, from the US's perspective, obviously, Mark, I haven't watched it in England, you watch it 2 years later. But when he turned up in the US, he turned up a couple of months before it was either a couple of months before or a couple of months after, I can't remember, but he came in very close to Undiscovered Country as effectively a way of cross-promoting it.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Didn't know that. Makes sense, though, I guess.
Yep, and actually, I say cross-promote, I mean, it's not something as blatant as that, but it's clearly would. Spock turning up on TNG obviously benefits TNG at the same time that there's a kind of like a movie property out there, which actually still remains one of my favourite films. I'm pretty sure it's number two in my list, but there we go. We need to do lists one day.
Undiscovered Country is a great film.
Mm.
Well, after we get past the movies, Doc, then we can rate them. But for some reason, I felt like Undiscovered Country came out first, and then Unification refers back to it for some reason. It's very close to each other, but I don't remember.
Certainly.
And that would have been... So, and there would have also been hype right around it anyway, even if it is, even if they come like a month later or before. There's.
All right. Well, Mark.
Okay. I've got nothing else.
I've got nothing else. New Star Trek series. Yay.
Yay.
And I'm very excited.
Cool. All right, then.
Okay. Should we get into the episode?
Sure. Go for it.
Yeah. Okay. So the synopsis for tonight's episode is... Captain Picard and three other people are abducted and imprisoned by an unknown force and replaced by duplicates. This is the 18th episode of Season 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is March 26, 1990, written by Richard Manning and Hans Beimler, and directed by Winrich Kolbe. Guest stars include Stephen Markle as Kovathol, Rainer Schoner as Esok, Jocelyn O'Brien as Mytena Haro, Jerry Rector as Alien 1, Jeff Rector as Alien 2. So I guess, I guess they were identical twins. They did look very alike, but I guess that I always assumed that was a makeup effect, but there you go. So what do we think about this episode? I like this episode. I think this is one that not many people talk about. I wouldn't say that that it's a disliked episode, but it's not one that you hear people talk about. It's not one of those really standout shows from any of the seasons. I think it's one of those little hidden gems. What about you guys?
Doc, you're usually more upbeat.
Oh, you want me to go
first? You're more upbeat than me, so go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, though, I'm going to have to bring you down because I'm going to have to inform you that I've been cheating on you, Lou. It probably was something like 6 months ago, maybe a little bit more. I should have looked it up. When the guys on 10 Forward asked me to come on to kind of give my thoughts on this episode. So the theory behind this show at the time was that they picked kind of like a hidden gem or what was deemed a hidden gem out of the back catalogue. Something, as Mark said, that wasn't necessarily universally praised, but was decent enough. So I've actually already given my thoughts on this episode elsewhere. Having said that, for today, obviously I rewatched it and I had, I reprocessed my thoughts. I don't know how much I'm going to agree with myself in the past. That dude he's pretty unreliable, if you ask me. But I actually really like this episode. I think that this is a good, really good episode of Star Trek. Had it not come here after Yesterday's Enterprise and The Offspring and Sins of the Father, and in the middle of TNG, we can see on the horizon Sarek coming up and The Best of Both Worlds. I think this would be let's roll back. This in season two, it would have been a great episode and a standout show. In season three, it gets a little bit lost, but I still think I think it's a good episode and I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it gets lost in the awesomeness, doesn't it? Because obviously, I've listened to a few, of the recent episodes, and you had Yesterday's Enterprise, which is a definite five. Then you have The Offspring, which is a very high five, if there is such a thing, which is an incredible episode. I have to agree with you, James. I think that is pretty much a flawless and perfect episode.
I've been saying that for a couple of weeks now.
I can't think of anything about The Offspring that isn't amazing. There's nothing I can say about it.
Okay, the Green Andorian's a bit weird.
There's that, but okay.
It doesn't matter.
I don't care because it's just awesome. But yeah, it does get lost in. I mean, I'd agree with everyone. Season three is where TNG really picks up. Although I actually like a lot of season two as well. Season one was pretty much a bit ropey. Season two was quite good. Season three is where it really picks up. And there were a lot of fantastic episodes. So episodes like this, which are really good and solid, like you say, James, had they appeared earlier, they would probably be highlighted a lot more, but they just get lost in the awesomeness of, Sarek and Best of Both Worlds and Yesterday's Enterprise and Offspring and all of the others, which I really love.
That's it.
I think...
Actually, just before I...
Sorry, I was just going to say, I think you're probably going to be come down on the other side, Lee, are you? Do I get that impression?
I'll let James finish his thought first.
Oh, sorry. What I was about to say, that I was halfway through the sentence before I had, you know, prod Lou again. I was extremely tempted that when I did my Desert Island trek to pick 5 episodes from season 3 of TNG. And I think that you could quite easily. And you could easily defend them.
Mm-hmm. Easily.
So, and that includes, by the way, that includes once you've taken yesterday's Enterprise off and Best of Both Worlds off as the guineas. Yeah. I still think there are 5 episodes in here that you could easily defend.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But this ain't one of them. I think you guys may have hit the nail on the head when you say, because of the fact there's been so many great episodes and then this happens to be snuck in. If this was in season 2, I think you're right. It would have pulled up season 2 a lot. But it's not. It, to me, this is rather boring. Having 4 people locked in a room while the doppelganger, which we've seen so many times before, is on the ship trying to run it into a star. It just reminds me of when Picard wanted to become one with the cloud.
Lonely Among Us, yeah. That's going to be one of my points. Yeah, well, I might as well make the point. We've seen that trope before. Picard is taken over. Are the crew going to have a mutiny against him because he's making foolish decisions? Yes, we have seen that before.
Yeah, but it takes too long to figure that out, though. That's the thing.
I love the line from Troy here when, you know, Picard's asking, oh, you know, how they're going to react, you know, with these weird orders. He's like, well, no, it's not out of character. You know, remember you turned into the cloud thing and then you were under Ferengi mind control. And, you know, and what about that one where you really freaked out when you saw a cloned version of yourself from 4 hours in the future? You know, you've got form on this. I kind of thought, well, that's
they've
not
seen
exactly
all this before, Captain, yeah.
It's not exactly a huge compliment to Picard that when he does go Duwali, people go, oh, alien influence.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. It takes him too long. They're ready to follow his orders. And, you know, couldn't Riker look into whether Picard actually received orders to abandon the mission and, you know, go to this star, this Lunkar cluster or pulsar or... I mean, he could have verified whether there was some kind of orders that came in for that, but he doesn't. He just says, yes, sir. It's not until they're...
He doesn't question his captain.
No, of course not. You know, and then when they start to question him, we still don't have enough. Let's just see. You know, it's not until they're within 10 feet of this star and the radiation's about to kill them that they finally say, okay, this is enough. But even then, isn't a Starfleet crew ready to give their lives... for the mission? I mean...
I guess it depends on the mission.
Right. It depends on the mission, but they don't know what the mission is. But, I mean, they either have enough faith to go into the star with the captain because he believes it's necessary, or they don't, and if that's the case, then they should question all dangerous missions that just come up out of nowhere. So... Okay. But anyway, Captain Picard is, you know, just chilling after eradicating the Firefox plague on Corcoroli 5. Okay, maybe not Firefox plague, but it's the Firefox plague. And however, you know, this is a super secret mission. No one knows about it. So really, we should never have discussed it here, should we?
No, we shouldn't have done.
No.
It's not for the likes of us cadets.
No. No. But as Picard is enjoying a good book while he gets sleepy, just then a flatbed scanner comes out of nowhere and takes a scan of Picard.
Not. It's the monolith from 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Is
Am I the only person who thought that?
Is that what that is?
It looks like it very much reminds me of the monolith from 2001 A Space Odyssey. Hovers over his body and then scans him.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. It's not the greatest effect in the world, of course. But I quite like the, you know, it's a simple plot, right? It's Picard gets abducted. For once, they actually pick up the fact that Picard was abducted, or at least there are signs that something wasn't right in the quarters, and Worf runs down and there's another Picard. I like this. This is good.
I think it's cool.
Something the matter, Lieutenant. Yes, you weren't answering the comm. Because I didn't want to. But anyway, ship sensors did notice the odd energy reading in Picard's quarters as he gets photocopied. What's up, Lieutenant? Okay, anyway. So the real Picard finds himself locked in a room with two other people. I call them the Spineless Jellyfish, Mizarian, and a Bolian first-year Starfleet cadet. How many Bolians are in Starfleet? Or I always thought they were just barbers and...
That's a racial stereotype if ever I heard one.
Yeah.
I mean, she does have hair, though, doesn't she? Although she has this very, very wide center parting down the middle, doesn't she?
It was a hell of a center parting.
It was. I mean, maybe, obviously, female Bolians have some level of hair, whereas the men don't.
Now, I'm under the impression that in the past, I've always said that I don't think we see other female Bolians, but I think I'm mistaken. Don't we see one in, like, Insurrection or something like that? I thought there was another, like, Bolian in the background that looked female. But also, you know, the first Bolian we saw, in fact, we've not seen Mr. Mott yet. So we're slandering this great...
Conspiracy. Was that the first Bolian?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So Conspiracy has the first Bolian, which is Captain Ricks.
Oh, that's right.
So he's the first, but so we haven't seen the Barber Bolian yet, though. Mm.
No.
And already we're slandering the race as barbers. Okay.
Listen, guys.
Just inappropriate.
Everyone listening, if you are a Bolian, we sincerely apologize. How's that?
The Battle Bridge does not condone xenophobia against Bolians.
No, of course not.
No. I mean, our ratings on Bolius 9 are through the roof.
They have been. They have been, yes. Well, yeah, that's true. And I don't want to lose those 17 downloads from Bolius 9. Okay, let's see. So, anyway, these people were also taken from their lives for unknown reason. However, Picard notices that there are four sleeping chambers. So obviously, there's going to get a fourth one. Hopefully, he or she is nice.
Yes, let's have someone
to hold
nice.
On to.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's have someone nice for a change.
That's right. Maybe Wesley? mere alternate universe Wesley. You know, the one we might like.
Mm. I like Wesley.
Mm. So you mean the captain of the new Star Trek series?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Wesley. Hey, you know, I got a question. I never thought of this until you guys were talking about earlier. You guys were talking about Captain Picard and Beverly getting married. You know, mm-hmm. Obviously they do get married in the future. When they become married.
In the books.
Well, no, they're. I mean, yeah, in All Good Things, it said that, you know.
Well, and a possible.
Yes, a possible alternative. Future. But let's say that was real. Does that mean Wesley is no longer a bastard child?
I thought this would come up. I do not subscribe at all to the theory that Wesley is Picard's son. He is the son of Jack Crusher. There was a lot of attraction and sexual tension between Picard and Beverly, but that was because Jack Crusher was Picard's best friend. Jack Crusher is Wesley's father. It is not... Mm-hmm. Jean-Luc Picard.
You don't go for the Wesley Picard thing, huh?
No, not at all.
Okay.
But personally, talking about the new Star Trek series, if Will Wheaton showed up, I'd love
oh,
that.
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I like Will Wheaton.
It could be actually Will Wheaton's, you know, coming full circle, right? He could be the main guy on the new show. And I think a lot of fandom would love that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lou, no, I think this episode disproves the Wesley Picard because, you know, that clearly Picard and Beverly are talking very frankly about stuff in this show, and it's clear that they've not, you know, they've not done the nookie yet.
Mm. Okay. No, maybe not. But they could have been, you know, highly intoxicated on Romulan ale or something, and, you know, they just don't remember or something. But anyway... In the center of the room is this thing. Now, what do you think that food was? To me, it looked like strawberry jello.
Yeah, It's a cylinder of jelly.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I would have liked it, maybe.
I suppose there's a vast difference between how something looks and how it tastes. Because, is it Kovathol says, it's edible, but I wouldn't call it food. And Picard gives it that little nibble in his face. He's like, ugh.
Yeah, and he throws it down.
Yeah. Or it could be like a bar of soap, I guess. Mm.
Okay. So, we're not going to meet with the USS Hood. The USS Hood, why does that sound familiar? Isn't that where Riker comes from, or...
He got dropped off in the Hood.
Yeah, it's been mentioned a few times. Yeah.
Okay, that's where I remember that from. Okay, so Picard changes the course of the ship to the Lunker cluster, and is actually creeping up to it, so looks like the Hood's going to have to wait. They have another secret mission that nobody knows about. So what do you think the point of going to the Lunker cluster was? And I wrote that thinking, what was the point of this? Was it filler? Or maybe it was the aliens' way of testing the entire crew to see what they will accept.
I just think it's the copy of Picard being imperfect. He's got a natural inquisitive nature, and he says to Data, what do we know about this pulsar? Oh, well, actually, a great deal, sir, and Data reels off this whole, you know, series of facts and figures about this pulsar, and I think Picard is naturally curious, but the aliens don't get it quite right, and he said, oh, we could be there at warp 7, we can be there in 34 minutes. Okay, let's go at warp 2. That's going to take us, like, 35 hours. That's fine. Off we go. I just think it's an incomplete clone. It just isn't 100% Picard.
Because I was... I think knowing what we know now, that they were studying authority and command, it just seems to me, and they were all telepathically linked, it just seems to me like these people were not only studying Picard, but they were also studying his crew to see how they deal with these insane orders that the clone Picard is giving.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what I took away from it, and that's kind of like the... That's something that I frankly didn't see the first time I was watching this as kind of, you know, as a youngster. I do think that the main thread that kind of that connects the two storylines is, you know, how do people deal with authority? And I know it's slightly stretched when they have the Picard going around and offering free drinks and singing songs and so on. But I think that you're supposed to read that subplot as being, you know, how does the crew handle the authority, and what can Picard, how far can Picard push this stuff? That's what I got from it. But it's also just a bit of fun, right, as well.
Yeah.
And you need a bit of peril, otherwise there's no show.
Okay, so the song that, you know, you bring up Picard in the drinking song, and I didn't even put any of this down, but I'm curious. My guess is you guys might have an idea of what he was singing, because I have none.
I do know the song. It's a song called Heart of Oak, and apparently it's some British naval drinking song. But I only know that from this episode. Other than that, I've got no clue. I think it's probably 17th, 18th, 19th century, something like that. But I know that's what the song's called. But it's a curious event. And the thing I always think as well, he said, ales for everyone. Now, is he paying for that? Isn't it all free in 10 forward, everyone?
I would have thought so.
You know, isn't it all free for everyone anyway? So it's not like he's buying drinks for everyone.
Uh-uh.
He says, everyone, have an ale. Oh, well, I could have one free anyway. And they're all like, hey, thank you, Captain.
Unless some of them shouldn't have been drinking because they're on duty anyway. But if the captain gives you a drink, I guess you have to take it.
Yeah, but it's all synthahol anyway.
Right.
So you can dismiss the alcoholic effects, can't you?
Easily. Yeah. Dismiss.
Easily, apparently.
Heart of Oak is the official march of the Royal Navy of the United Kingdom. So yes, I figured you guys might know something more about this than I do. All I know
That's all I know.
Come cheer up. Ah, come cheer up, my lads.
'Tis to glory we steer.
To find something new in this wonder. Nobody tuned in to hear me sing. I guarantee that. Even Kieran McDuff is going, God damn it, stop it.
Yeah, I heard him. Yeah. Where did he find that clip from?
I don't know. I don't know. Should I put a little? You know, thank you, Renee. By the way, thank you, Renee Roberts. No relation. She mentioned that there's a 15-minute gap in the last show where I was.
Yes,
damn it. Where I was supposed to put an audio clip in, and I do that thinking that when I have it on Acoustica MP3 audio mixer and I see that gap, it reminds me, oh, something's supposed to go there. So there's a couple things I need to correct in the last two shows. What else here? Okay, so, Doc. See, this is at this point, I'm going to put a nice 15-minute stretch to remind myself to put in a proper sound.
Making a couple of hours.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Why is this so long? But, okay, Doc, we may need to be schooled. I'm not very good at math. I think you might be.
Okay. Oh, you're not going to ask about really?
I am.
The prime numbers?
I'm going to ask you, tapping out the first six prime numbers.
Oh, okay. So here goes. I will if you want me to, but Picard doesn't. He does five, he does five again, he does seven, and he does five again. Those aren't... What? You can clearly see that they've been doing stuff in post, but he does... I think he repeats five, he does seven, and then he does five again afterwards. Now, okay. Maybe they just faded the thing out. But if you want me to tap on them, it's probably about 40, or... You know, you don't want to sit here and listen to 40 taps, do you?
No. No. Okay. But what are the first six prime numbers?
2, 3, 5, 7, 11, and 13.
13, yeah.
Oh, he definitely wasn't tapping that many times.
And then, no, he wasn't tapping 13. He didn't get, I think he did five. He might have done 2 and 3 and then 5 in complete fairness. But he did 5, 5, 7, and then he went back to 5 again. And that lets people know that we're intelligent.
Well, that's assuming they believe that in prime numbers.
Well, it's not a case of belief. It's a case of pure
you
mathematics.
You can't not believe in them.
You can't not believe in it. It's like not believing in gravity.
So alien math and human math have to be the same?
Yes.
Yes.
Because it's a fundamental aspect of the universe. One plus one will always equal two, regardless of your outcome. Prime numbers are prime numbers. Pi is pi. Mm. It's the universal language.
Oh.
Yeah. So there's a fundamental abstraction that's gone on there that's beyond any kind of cultural or specific reference to the human race. Yeah. So there we go. Now, having said that, of course, we choose not to define one as a prime number. They might.
Yes.
So... You know,
they might
for all
do.
They
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
That's in there going, well, this idiot, he forgot one.
Yeah.
We also don't define, you know, zero either. And there are less cases that, well, actually, in some cultures, you didn't even define zero as a number, which is also a little bit humorous. But also, you know, we say that the prime number is the one that's important. Who's to say it's not like the prime plus seven?
Exactly.
Just shifted along. So you could have things like that happen, but the basic properties of prime numbers is like a universal.
Yeah.
They may focus more significance on even numbers, for instance. So 2, 4, 6, 8, that might be culturally significant to them. But yeah, you're right, James. I mean, prime numbers are what they are. So any
do you think if it...
They would know what a prime number was.
So do you think if it was like a... If the race was a little bit dumber, they'd be sitting there tapping out, and they go, oh, what are you doing? Oh, he's tapping out all integer numbers. One, one, two, one, two, three. And you think, okay, well, they're not that smart then.
All right. My race has no enemies. Oh, man, I laughed. I laughed when...
Well, they're invaded, like, 9 times over 200 years or something like that.
Yeah. You're racist.
I quite liked him, the Mizarians. I thought he was quite interesting with that little... I thought the makeup was quite nice and he had the Sydney Opera House on his head. I thought that was quite cool.
All right.
I thought it was a nice makeup effect.
Now, there's a very important question I think needs to be answered at this point. I mean, it's critical. Critical. If Mr. Thaw's been there for 12 days... Does he stink? Or do you think there's, like, hidden shower facilities?
Where's the toilet as well?
But that's why that Norsican was so upset when he turned up, because he was using his bed. At that point, they were out of beds, and he was probably presented with a 12 days worth of for want of a better word. Mm-hmm. But he was okay. See, one thing that I noted last time when I was watching this is that the Star Trek TV show is focused around the four people that get abducted, and then we also follow Picard as the other dude is going through his life. And I always get the impression that live in the other people's lives. There's kind of one of these aliens that is getting up to stuff. And with the Mizarian, I mean, he was just sitting there, right, in isolation, contemplating. So you can imagine how much fun the other guy's having replaced him, thinking, oh, okay, 12 days already. Can I go home?
Yeah. Now, I often wondered what the other doppelgangers were up to. That's an interesting point. So I'm guessing the cadet did some, there were some odd shenanigans going on at Starfleet Academy. And maybe you called him a Norsican. Obviously, he wasn't a Norsican. He was from Chalna.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he was a Norsican for all intents and purposes, wasn't he? A ginger Norsican. You can imagine, him being a little bit odd, maybe not quite so aggressive on his own home planet, and all the other Norsican people, all the other ginger Norsicans thinking, what's wrong with this dude? What's happening here? So it would have been interesting. I mean, it wouldn't have happened in the episode, obviously, because we didn't know the characters, but just I'd quite like to see what their doppelgangers got up to.
I'd be willing to bet that Osik is one hell of a kisser, assuming you can get past those outer teeth. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he eats either. But
he certainly doesn't eat that red jelly stuff, does
mm-mm.
he?
No. Well, he tried. Then he, violently got
poison
sick and threw it aside. Does that mean there's nothing for you to eat?
Not yet.
You. Oh, Picard, you're not going to let him, will you? Well, first of all, he's got the knife. He's got the teeth. I'm going to let him have you for the next week, and then I'll stop him from eating me.
Okay, so let me ask you guys a question. Say you're at work, or say you're just out and about, and you get trapped in a lift. How long is it before you turn to the guy next to you and ask him how long he can stand without food, and then start looking around at people for the meatier people on the lift? To me, it seemed like they got onto the idea of, let's eat the small guy rather quickly.
They did a little bit, didn't they? Yeah.
I get it.
I mean, I think I could probably go a good few days before I worry about who I'm going to eat.
But the problem is that from what James said, I'd be the first on the menu.
Why?
That's fine as long as it's not me.
He said the meatier person. There's a very good chance I'll be the bigger person on the elevator, so... On the lift. I'm sorry, the lift.
In the lift. In the lift. Oh, did I say lift?
You said lift.
I didn't notice.
Well, that's probably what it's called over there, a lift.
Well, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
And they're called turbo lifts, not turbo elevators.
That's turbo elevators, yeah, turbo lifts.
That is true. I thought sick bay was an actual, just a Star Trek thing. No, it's actually a military thing.
It is, yeah. So. A naval thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's see where I was in here. So we do get, as we mentioned, we get our fourth person from the planet Chaunar, and he has a knife. So if Picard maybe had been duplicated with his phaser, I wonder if they would have let him keep it.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I think that can I ask a question in terms of, as these guys are coming in, as you obviously, on rewatch, you can see that there are different types of people being brought into this kind of, a mouse trap, for want of a better word, or, you know, mouse maze. You do have, you know, Picard, and you do have the engine, or the cadet, and you've got the other two extremes in terms of the pacifist and the dude that needs to carry around a big army knife with him. And on rewatching, I did notice that it was, I think it was clearer than I remembered it being, that this was kind of setting themselves up in a little bit of a game. And I don't know how much you know, other people in the audience would have been ahead of the reveal, because I wasn't, although I'm very often not the most, you know, person. I'm not the person that notices this stuff. So having said that, given that the, you know, the proto-Norsegan's coming over and he's the person in authority that is going to, you know, not be able to be spoken to, and he is the guy wielding the, you know, the force, I think it's perfectly appropriate that he comes in with the you know, the weapon, rather than it's Picard that comes in with the phaser.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I would imagine they would have taken Picard's phaser off him, and they would have almost given this dude a knife.
Hmm.
From the experiment's point
that
of
makes
view.
Sense.
Yes. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
At one time, I thought Mr. Thal sounded familiar, like his voice. Maybe like it was similar to maybe Roth Offenhaus, you know, from the Neutral Zone. But
yeah,
definitely not the same person. Is Ralph? I think is bigger. Yeah. Okay. So,
have we spoken about the poker game yet?
No,
because
we didn't.
We're darting all over the place.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, the only thing I'd like to point out about the poker game, well, at this stage at least, is I think it's an absolute disgrace that Geordi has only 93% engine efficiency. I mean, that's terrible if you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, assuming you can get up to 100, and it's not like 100% as in a theoretical maximum. But, you know, you might be, he's pretty close to losing, you know, one in 15 or so of all energy, just because he hasn't managed to scrub down the, you know, the Jeffrey tube and got the things working correctly. He should not have any time off until it's at least 97%, I would have thought.
Isn't it 98 now? I believe at the end it was 98.
I think so.
Okay. So, but then here, like I say, they should have figured out this guy is really strange. Number one, the poker game. Number two, the bar song. And number three, going to, you know, Troy. How is the crew? How are they dealing with me? How are they dealing with me? How far will that trust go? would you tell me?
It makes you wonder why. So it makes me wonder why Troy didn't kind of report anything suspicious, because it did sound like Picard, or, you know, quote unquote, you know, fake Picard was, you know, only a couple of seconds away from saying, "Oh, you know, were they following my orders? Because I've got some real crazy ones up my sleeve that I'm considering issuing." Everyone seemed to be appeasing Picard at the beginning. Both Riker and Troy, they seemed to be suggesting, "Oh, you know, it's all okay. Don't worry. It's you know, we're gonna follow your orders. It'll all be good." And they didn't really get anything more than that, right? He didn't get any pushback at all,
right? No, he didn't. Not till the end. Of course, we all trust you. But why are you asking? Oh no, she didn't do that. Okay. Well, Troy, will you be my secret double agent and spy on the enemy for me? And like you said, I even put in the notes, Troy should have reported this to Riker. That makes no sense. Okay.
And Troy's an empath, right? Still? Or
right.
When it suits the plot, yeah.
Mm. On an as-needed basis.
No, yeah. I think that it's, I mean, we've highlighted when Troy has been good in the past. Even in, you know, bits in season two and stuff, when she's been good and she's been kind of integral to the plot, I suspect that a lot of the bad stuff about Troy comes from episodes like this. Not when Troy does anything bad per se, but you realize that she's not, you know, the her special features that would clearly be catching this are just not working, or they're not written as being working. At which point you think, well, what's the point in having these special powers? And what's the point of having, you know, if this person's an alien in the sense that she can sense people's thoughts and stuff, then she has to be written as such. She can't just be written as a normal person that every now and again will have one of these crazy episodes of her own where she happens to be an empath this week.
Yeah.
And I think I've moaned about this before, but I think that they fell into the same situation with Kes as well on Voyager. So, you know, Kes on the surface was potentially had a huge amount of, she has kind of like, you know, psychic abilities, and she has the extremely short lifespan, and she has lots of weird stuff that if you think about for any amount of time, you realize there should be significant implications to being so different. Yet almost every week she was not different. Until one day that they went, oh, no, she must be different this week. And it's that kind of like snapping back and forth, which is due to the bad writing, that I think eventually makes people think, well, if you're not going to bother, I'm not going to be bothered to invest.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the four decide to bust out of the containment area, and they get to a control panel to get to the outside door. But they're stunned for their effort. I warned you not to go there.
Hmm. It's quite funny seeing them all being zapped by that electricity. And that, yeah, Mr. Thol standing there, sort of quivering. I quite like that.
Right. Okay. Told you not to do that. I warned you. Okay, Picard B, he's putting the moves on Crusher pretty good, isn't he? Wants to dance.
Yeah, this is quite a unusual scene. It's quite a funny scene, I think, in the quarters, where they're having dinner, and it just all seems very, obviously, I mean, we all know it's an imposter because, you know, we're seeing the other side of the coin, but it's just, I'm just sitting there thinking, how uncomfortable is this going to get? How odd is this going to go? And obviously it cuts short, where he's like, oh, well, maybe you're right. Goodbye. And then just closes the door on her. It's, yeah, I do like these things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so I have two things to point out on this particular scene with Crusher. The first is that I'm a real apologist for Crusher. I think that she's great. And I do like that there is this kind of like undercurrent of the relationship between her and Picard. And in my mind, it should never be resolved, because I think that's usually how these things work best. And, you know, given that Crusher's got a kid and Picard's not really interested in family, I don't think it needs to be resolved. So, you know, they're not pining after each other and are living miserable lives. So just let them have this, you know, little bit of undercurrent in the background. You know, bring it up and make it a kind of like a long-term friendship without having to turn it into, you know, them getting down to Nookie. But the other thing that I liked about this, and I mentioned it before when I was on 10 Forward, is that you've got these aliens. The entire episode's about these aliens trying to understand authority. And the thing that they seem to be trying to get away with here is, oh, now that I'm in a position of authority, let's see how much sexual harassment in the workplace I can get up to today. And I just can't think that that's really the best use of, you know, when you're considering the nuances of authority, are you really talking about pressurizing your, you know, your direct reports into sleeping with you? It doesn't seem right in my mind.
It doesn't seem right, but then, if I could get to bang Beverly Crusher, I'd probably give it a go as well.
Mm. So it's the great unanswered question from this this alien race: how much authority do you need in order to get Beverly into the sack?
No, that's a good question. Okay,
I'd quite like to know that myself.
Well, there you go. If you ever run into them at the convention, we should let them ponder that one for a while.
Mm. Okay. Oh, Okay, Tubbs is curious. How much would it have taken for Picard to get you in the sack? Or get Crusher in the sack? What do you think her answer would be? Security!
Yeah, I think it'd be escorted out at that point.
I think so, yeah.
So, okay, where was I on my notes here? Is there anything you guys want to bring up?
Let me bring up one thing. I know you're not that kind of, you're not that hot on this episode, Lou. But would you agree that the Picard, in particular the Picard that's, you know, the real Picard, he's very well written in my mind, and I think he plays it. We're still not that far into the season, and I do remember when I was kind of, you know, critiquing this. I think that this is pretty much fully formed Picard. In for all intents and purposes, and I thought that his performance, as you know, with the three extras that turn up, I think he does very well. And you kind of, you know full well that this is how Picard would behave in this situation. And maybe this episode, because it just juxtapositions this imposter, you realize that that's not Picard, and you think that the entire crew should see that. And I think it's good, you know, I'll give kudos to Patrick Stewart this week, because there was a night and day between these two characters.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. I thought Picard did a great job in this. Okay.
And I think he's well written in the fact that his role in that, you know, later on when he talks about, you know, I'm the captain, you know, bred to be an authority, and the collaborator guy, the aggressive guy, the cadet who's bound to him, and I think they all play their parts really well. But no, I think Picard's really well written, and it's really well acted as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, but eventually Picard figures out who the spy in the room is, and turns out to be the little Bolian, because he tosses out that Firefox plague.
Yeah, he does, because he talks about the, because she says, "Oh, Captain Picard's done all of these things." The Mintakans and some other thing that we've never seen, and he says, "Oh, but he tests her with the Coca-Cola 5 and the Firefox plague."
You forgot the where he posed nude for the Playgirl magazine. He
said, "Yes, oh, yeah, that's right."
And that's when he looks at her and goes, "Huh? Wait, how would you know about that?" Okay, and that's a little after that. That's when Picard comes in to congratulate LaForge. That's it. It was a 96% efficiency of the engines, so we went from 92 or 93 to 96. And like I said, like you said, James, why not 100? It makes no sense. But come cheer up, my lads. But LaForge pretty much sucked at singing that, didn't he? Something.
It's quite funny seeing LaForge and Worf just there. They're sort of pretending to sing along, and they're like, look at each other, and they're like, what the hell is going on?
You know anything about this song? I certainly don't. No, this was never sung in Cruise. Or on Goth. Voth. Is it Goth or Voth? Goth. That's it, Goth. That's where Worf is from, isn't it? Goth.
Galt.
Galt. Galt. Gold. The farming community. No, they never sang that song on the farming. I wonder what Worf would have sang at the farm.
Old MacDonald had a tar.
E-I-E-I-O. And on his targ, he had some teeth. E-I-E-I-O. With a bite here and a bite there. Okay, anyway. Okay, so the clandestine meeting of the future mutineers. Keep the captain under observation and be ready to act. Until they've arrived at the Lonkar cluster. And like I said earlier, Picard wants to join with the, you know, cloud apparently again. So he's acting the same as he did there. This ship arrives and the shields begin failing. But hey, let's get moving on in. I mean, that's funny. Take us in, Mr. Crusher. We will not survive. That's fine. Take us in, Mr. Crusher.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll be okay. Just take the ship.
Yeah, no. Belay that order, everybody. You're a fool. And anyone who follows you, no. You've shown us none of the concern that Picard would. So walk away, son. You bother me.
So do you think Picard would have got away with this had he not had the kind of singing song in Ten Forward? Because that seemed to be the point where Riker cracked. For whatever reason, I think it was not, it shouldn't have been written that way. But it was almost as if Riker was going, okay, yeah, yeah, dangerous activity, yeah, fine. Oh, yeah, hit it on Crusher, yeah, you know, whatever, fine. What? He's singing in Ten Forward? He said, the line has to be drawn here, this far and no further.
I mean, that was, it was, maybe in terms of writing, that was a little bit clumsy because it was just way over the top, wasn't it? In terms of his behavior just being a little bit off, he could think, okay, well, you know, he's a captain. If we're on a secret mission, he might be a little bit out of his normal sorts. But then just strolling around Ten Forward, buying ales for everyone and singing drinking songs is just, maybe that is a little bit of clumsy writing. That's just making it a little bit too obvious.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe if he told them that we believe Khan is still alive, actually, he survived and he's somewhere in this cluster. No, that was stupid. Never mind now, that.
I mean, having said all this, I get the impression that I don't think the aliens do want to destroy the ship. I think it's a game they're playing, and yeah. I think that they fully expect that the Picard clone or the Picard imposter gets removed. So I think that that's what they're trying to do. They're always trying to push his luck. So it's not. I don't particularly see any malice coming from the. From the bad guys, I suppose, this week.
No. I don't either.
So you don't think if Crusher had set a course into the cluster that they wouldn't have just let him go, or do you think they would have eventually stopped him?
They would have to have eventually stopped them, right? I think maybe they had better technology so that, you know, past the point of no return for us, they would have still been able to save the crew. But I didn't get the impression that they were actively going out of their way to kill everyone. Instead, they were just going to see whether or not these guys would blindly follow orders.
Yeah. They're going to see how far we could take things before they went, whoa, someone's going to get hurt here. Okay, now we understand this level of authority. Let's save the ship and, you know, take them out of the rat maze that they were in.
I see. I mean, it's a good thing they weren't studying Janeway then. So, foot on the accelerator, Mr. Crusher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Warp speed into the sun. Yeah.
Get it over. Okay. So, time to end the game. Picard calls out the little bullion, and he figures out the truth. No cadet would have known about Corel Life 5 or the Firefox Plague. And that's what I intend to call it from now on, as the Firefox Plague. Anybody with me?
Cool. Yeah, I'm with you on that. That's a good call.
Okay,
but I've forgotten what the original plague was, so you've kind of got me by default there.
Fire rocks.
Oh, you've reminded me.
So let's see. We have the Firefox plague. We have the Internet molester. What other browsers?
Pardon me?
Yeah, browsers. Firefox. I'm now going to call the Firefox plague. Internet molester.
The Chrome syndrome.
The what?
The Chrome syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. There was another one that was out that I don't remember because no one ever
used. The Safari fever.
There we go. Okay, we're doing good. Anybody can think of others, put it in the forum. That's, of course, if you want to use it still. All right. We still haven't gotten much on yesterday's Enterprise. Kieran is still missing in action.
We'll have to, at a certain point, we'll have to send over a rescue party.
I might. That's really strange when, you know, I'm thinking about sending him an email. Hey, how you doing?
Where are you?
Just want to make sure, you know, our show lives and breathes around you. So if you'd stop participating, we might as well stop writing. Anyway. So Picard's beamed back to the ship with the alien. They want to study how alien species interact with each other and wanted to study the nature of command. And now this was a great part. Just with the nod, Picard was able to imprison the aliens. I mean,
I like that. I do like that. That little the sort of nods between them as they're looking at each other, and you know, they're just talking where, oh, well, our, you know, we're really advanced and we can do this and we can do that, and they're all just nodding to each other and they don't notice it. It's a nice little time.
Because aren't they still telepathically? And no, I guess they're only telepathically connected to the clones, not to the real one. All right.
And I have to say, I think, I mean, I'm less enthusiastic about the ending because I think it goes full throttle into TOS territory in my mind. And it's very, this little maneuver that Picard does, you can very easily see Kirk doing the same thing. So he comes off, in my mind, he comes off pretty smug about the whole exercise. And even down to the idea that, you know, he says, well, you know, we've shown them a lesson, now you guys be on your way, like a small misbehaving child. It just reminds me of TOS. And then the worst is that when then Crusher comes onto the bridge at the end, and they all have a good laugh at Picard's expense.
Yeah. Right. Right. How'd you know it wasn't me, number one? Well, I can't believe you're that good a singer.
I should look forward to hearing your report.
Mm-hmm. Wait to hear the doctor's, because she's coming on the bridge here soon. Captain.
Now, when was the last time that Crusher was on the bridge? As in that seat on the bridge?
Yeah, she just walks in, sits down. It's like, what are you doing? Mm. What are you doing? You're a doctor. Why are you sitting on the bridge? You've got nothing to do up here. Go back to sick bay.
Man, just...
I'm not convinced she's been there since... Okay, maybe hiding Q, she was there? What, as they were going on their medical emergency, maybe? Or encounter at Farpoint, maybe? Mm. I don't think she's been on the bridge for, I mean, please, if anyone can prove me wrong, I'll be grateful to receive it. But it's very, very rare that she comes up to the bridge and, like, sits down next to her, next to Picard. So, yeah, so he must have been a bit suspicious of that.
It's convenient for the plot, though, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is. And that's what matters.
Sure. Okay. Well, I don't know. Well, I did note that Crusher comes on board and has this Khmer sailor look in her eyes, but Picard has no idea why. What's wrong with her? Put it in report number one. Okay, I am done here. Is there something we missed? Any more to discuss?
No, I think we've covered it.
Okay. Well then, I guess it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. So, obviously, the other two on this call are going to have better things to say. So, let's end this episode on a positive note. So, get me out of the way. It's not really my kind of episode. Boring in many parts, and there's not a lot of action. It's just a redress of previous episodes where somebody's taken over someone, and whenever they take over the captain, there's some real danger potential. It's just a redressing, adding the other three people in a room where they have not, they can only try and open a door to find that there's a wall behind the door. You're the enemy, you're the enemy, no, you're the spy, no, you're the spy, prove I'm the spy, prove you're the spy. I don't know. To me, I was just kind of bored with it. You know, who's going to take charge type of thing. I guess what they should have done is let Thal become the boss, and let's see where it would have got him. Actually, they probably would have been there for a few more months. After all the recent fives and the four from last week, this is sad. I'm only giving this one a 2.5. And yeah. I'll go 2.5. Mark, what about you? What are you thinking?
Well, as I said earlier, I mean, I do like this episode. I think, and as we discussed, because season 3 is overall, you know, one of my favorite seasons of TNG. I think there are a lot of fantastic episodes. It does sort of get lost in the awesomeness that surrounds it, but that doesn't mean it's not a good episode. And I really I really enjoy it. I really enjoy that interaction between those four characters in the little rat space. I like Esok, although he's very two-dimensional. He's the sort of ginger Norsican pseudo-Klingon aggressive alien. I do like Mr. Thol as well. I just love his deadpan delivery. I also quite like the cadet as well. I think the way she sort of is subservient to Picard is quite interesting. Yes, we've seen the whole the whole trope with Picard being taken over. Is he going to take them into the cloud? We've seen that before when Lonely Among Us. But I do really like the scenes with Beverly. And I think the conclusion with the aliens turning up at the end is quite interesting. And it is very TOS, you're right, when they're sort of trapped in the force field and, oh, please let us out. But overall, I do still really enjoy this. It's not one of the standard episodes of the entire series or of season three, but nonetheless, I think it's definitely worthy of a rewatch. And I'm... A score. I'm going to give this a very random 3.75 stars. It's not quite up to a 4, but I think it's better than a 3.5. And I know that's probably going to make your brain explode, James, but I usually rate on a 10 scale, so I allow myself half stars, and I don't think it's sort of between a 7 and an 8 on my score, so a 3.75. But a good episode, and I enjoy it.
Okay. James.
Okay, then I suppose it's my turn to go next. Now, I like this episode. I do like it, and I enjoy it kind of in isolation. You know, I know it's in the middle of season three, and I know it's with a lot of other good episodes around it, but I do think it's a good episode. I really do. I think that there are two parts. There are clearly two parts to this episode. There's the bit with Picard and the quartet, and then there's the Picard on the ship doing the stuff that he's getting up to. Now, I away from the kind of the character interaction with Beverly, which I think is interesting, and I do like that relationship. I think they had that relationship going very well in the end of the first season, and then obviously had to pause it with Gates McFadden disappearing for season two. So I like that this is kind of back on the table. So I do appreciate that. Does it need to be connected to this episode per se? Not really. So I could kind of leave the scenes on the Enterprise and what they're trying to do. I do think that the tension about, are you going to follow a crazy order from a crazy guy is a little bit false. My main positives come from when you have the quartet of the anarchist, the pacifist, Picard, and a cadet, and I think that part is very well done. I think it's very well acted, both by Patrick Stewart and also the guest cast this week is particularly good. I think it's a nice mystery that gets kind of solved out in front of you in a properly written way. So I think that you're hoping that this is going to work, and you're tense as you get the setbacks and so on, and as it should be. I also think it's relatively clever how they are putting on top of this a relatively, not necessarily greatly disguised, it's a thinly disguised commentary on, people in authority and how different people react in different ways. And when I first watched this as a child, that was completely over my head, and I think it's nice that it's there. And it has something to say. Now, of course, it's not the deepest philosophical kind of study of authority that's ever been done. But I do enjoy it, and I think it makes it a little bit more special than your average, this dude's stuck somewhere and he needs to get out kind of thing, where you have to fully rely on the drama of knowing your character's out of and he's in a prison somewhere and he's trying to escape. Anyway. Overall, I do enjoy this episode. I like it, I like it quite a lot. I believe I have to rate this a 4 out of 5. Mm. I'm pretty sure that's what I rated it last time.
You don't have to if you don't want to.
But actually, I feel like it deserves it. I think it's above average for Trek, in my mind. I think 3 is a little too low. So, of course, it's not, you know, it is a come down from the last couple of weeks. But I do think that this episode has something to say. I think it's pretty well executed. The stuff on the ship, I know that we've retrod there before, and we've got these people walking around saying, oh, is Picard, has he been abducted by an alien influence again? But, you know, the way they try to play it is, there is a different spin on it, which is the kind of the study of authority this week. Mm. And, you know, I hope they're not going to come back to this that many more times and have him go off on a on a weird mind control bender. But I can, you know, I'm perfectly happy with this week. So I think 4 is a reasonable rating. And I know, Lou, that despite, I think, at the beginning of the season, where I was coming in way below you, and you started to pull ahead, I'm certain I've now caught you back up.
Well, let me see. Gene?
I can hear clicking in the spreadsheet.
You betcha. Yes, you have. You have caught up. You're at 3.78, and I'm at 3.76. So you're light years away from me. However, let me see here. No, that can't be right. It says our guests are 4.64. But that can't be right.
We've had Ben on a couple of times.
Right? Oh, that's true. That's true.
The scale from 1 to Ben.
Yeah, 1 to Ben. That is so true. 13. We've done 18 so far. Guests... Actually, hold on. I'm wrong. Guests have done 15 so far. No. 14. So they're still at 4.31. So, again, third year in a row that the guests like Star Trek more than we do.
They should get their own podcast.
Yes, yeah. You said that before.
They should look at it critically every week.
Yeah. Let's change it. I'll change my other podcast to the Guest Trek Show. The Guest Trek Show. But, I don't know, someday we'll go on to Lower Pylon, too.
So, Mark, the last time I think...
You keep saying that. Is that going to be a thing? Or are you going to go on to do DS9?
Oh, well, I'm trying. I'm trying to get him to go on to do DS9. He hasn't committed yet.
Okay.
Oh, I mean, hang on. Let me just be very clear. And I know that I like to have fun with this, but I don't need to be asked twice when someone says, do you want to... Hey, how do you think about sitting down for the next 4 years and watching DS9? That's a done deal.
It's not really too much of a chore, is it?
No, it's not.
I'm due a rewatch, actually.
Now, the last time we had you on, Mark, I'm pretty sure that you were about to come back with 2 to beam up. So how are things going?
I wanted to ask that, but I thought, you know, maybe it's not a good idea. I'll leave that alone. But since he said something...
Yeah, I don't know. It may come back, it may not. I don't know. It depends. It's been about a year now. It's been a year almost to the day since we've done anything.
Don't worry, I am just putting your leg on this one.
Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, it's been almost 2 years since the Lou Trek Show, so...
Yeah, it's been almost a year since we've done anything. Maybe. Never say never. We'll see. We'll see if that comes back. I'm just sort of too busy now. You know, I do 4 hours of commuting a day. And weekends are, it's 2 hours door-to-door into London and 2 hours door-to-door back. So
how's the new job going in general?
Oh, really well. Really well.
All good?
All good for the most part. I mean, I rant and moan about things from time to time, but yeah, it's not so new anymore. I mean, it'll be a year on the 1st of December. So, but no, it's all good. So maybe we'll come back. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Eventually, I guess, what do we do, Doc? Do DS9, then Voyager, then Enterprise, and then TOS?
To be honest, I'm pretty sure that we'll have to do the new series. DS9.
Someone has to do the new series. I'm gonna since I pay the bills, I might have to draw lots on who gets to do the new series. Because I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to do the new series, so
it isn't.
We'll have to work out the logistics of how that happens.
That is an interesting point. Yeah, but you know, in January 2017, according to my schedule, which is very unscientific, we'd still be at about the end of season 5. So, but
we'll see what happens with that. I mean, I'm sure everyone's going to want to do that. So, we'll work something out for the new series.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll just do an ensemble show.
There you go. Or what you could do is assign to the groups. Each episode has a different group.
Possibly. Yeah. We'll work something out.
Okay. And since none of us knows what it's going to be, we can't say, "No, I want that one." We don't know what it is.
I'm sure we'll have 5 concurrent shows where everyone discusses it in parallel.
Pretty much.
I mean, we're also going to have the same thing when the film comes out, right? Sorry, I don't think I've ever said Star Trek Beyond out loud, but it's Star Trek Beyond, right?
Is that it?
It is, yeah.
Ah.
Star Trek Beyond.
No, wait a minute. What's that? The new movie or the new series?
Who doesn't get that?
That's the new movie.
That's the new movie.
One Step Beyond. And I'm really disappointed that no one has done a Star Trek / Madness mashup.
Ah.
Lou has
Lou,
no
do you know
idea
what we're on about?
No.
No.
No. What about Colin? You gotta try and get Colin over to our side.
If Colin wants to come on and do a show, he's more than welcome.
Well, there you go, Colin. You heard it from the best. The best. The boss. I almost wanted to put master and boss together, and I came up with bastard.
Call me a bastard.
Whatever, it works.
Well, there you go. Your show's canceled.
Yeah, but nobody's going to know that. I mean, they're just going to see it gone. Oh, yeah. And then, what was it? And that's funny. Nobody knows that somebody was able to hack into somebody else's account. Remember that, Mark?
Yeah,
they took our show down. It's funny.
That was very odd. Yeah, but that was all. As soon as I got wind of that,
James. I don't even know if you know about it. I don't know if I told you.
I don't. No, I have no idea what this is.
Yeah, one of our last couple shows, it was just taken off. It was sent private.
It was very strange. It looked like someone got hold of Paul Drinkwater's account and just did something very specific, like just making that one episode of the Battle Bridge private, which is very strange. So
which episode was it?
Can't remember.
I think it was before yesterday's Enterprise. It may have been Matter of Perspective or DJQ or something. Well, actually, I could go into the WordPress blog and find out for sure.
It was very strange. So, I disabled Paul Drinkwater's account and we discovered it was someone from China or something.
Yeah.
It was all very weird.
You never know. They might have had a point.
because that's the only thing they did. I looked at the logs. They signed on his account just enough time to change the parameters of our show and then, boom, they were gone.
Yeah, weird.
their work was done. Their work here was done. That's all they asked. They just asked to take down that. I mean, if it was either, I assume they'll be more offended by our take on a Matter of Perspective than DJQ. But who knows? Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. So, but you were gonna. Did you change everybody's password for it?
Yeah, reset a load of passwords. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was like, you don't need to worry about mine. It's like some 64 character obscene thing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Mark. Well, hey, it's good to have you on again. Let me see where we have you. We have you.
I'm up for another, in my opinion, overlooked and underrated episode because it appears right before The Best of Both Worlds, and that's Transfiguration, so right at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. And I like that one, actually. So. Yeah, I do sort of like that one.
Do you know, I don't think I've seen that one in a very long time, or at least I don't have strong memories of it.
Often overlooked.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, but I know the episode you mean, and I know what the show is about. But if I rewind to my old VHS days, and you know, you had the double discs of, well, you had the double episodes per tape.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure this is the most fast-forwarded through episode of Star Trek that's ever been released.
Mm. Well, it'd be interesting to see what you make of it then. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, just so you can get to the best of both worlds.
Geordi finally gets some.
He does.
Yes.
He sort of kind of does.
Yeah, Miss Henshaw.
Yeah.
He tries it.
Worth watching for that alone. Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth watching for that alone. Yeah. It's not on the holodeck. It's not his right hand. It's an actual woman. So good job, Geordi. We'll talk about that later. So, all right, Mark. Thanks for coming on again. And
my pleasure.
We'll see you for some transfiguration.
Next time on Star Trek: The Next Generation, Captain Picard's holiday becomes a romantic adventure.
From the moment I met you, I knew you were going to be trouble.
A seductress lures him on a quest to find a weapon from the future.
Perhaps I should kill you and then take the disc.
But if it falls into enemy hands, it could spell disaster.
You will return what is ours.
On Star Trek: The Next Generation.
So join us next week, everyone, as we review episode 19, Captain's Holiday, and we're going to have Carnivore J.
Was that a question?
Haven't we had enough Carnivore? No, we haven't.
Almost certainly.
That's a great episode. I like Captain's Holiday.
Oh, yeah? Okay, well, okay, Chris, this is your last time for this. No, it's not. We have Hollow Pursuits. Okay, everyone, welcome to the Battle Bridge with your host, Lou James and Chris, who just couldn't join us this week, apparently, or something. I don't know. Good stuff. All right. Captain's Holiday next week, guys. That's it. That's all I got. Thank you for downloading, and good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Do that again, Mark. He overruled you.
Bye.
Your turn, James.
Good night, everyone.
All right. I left in when you said, don't do that to them.
Did I?
Yeah.
By the way, I am 5 episodes behind. I have been listening, but I do get behind. And sometimes, so I listen to always listen to the podcasts at work. I have a tendency to listen to music while I'm commuting, but then when I'm at the desk, I listen to podcasts. And there's something so weird and something to be said about my psyche when I'm sitting there going, "Ooh, should I listen to the latest, whether it's latest Dan Carlin episode or This American Life or whatever the BBC put out? Or no, I'll listen to myself ramble about Deja Q." Yeah, that would be good.
That'll do.
When you make that choice, you really should go and see a doctor.
Yeah, and not a you doctor, huh?
No.
A real doctor.
So I guess a real question is, you listen to our show?
I do.
I don't. And that may explain...
Well, you edit.
Yeah, that could be, but that could explain why I screw up when I'm supposed to put things in that aren't there. But no, once I'm done with it, I'm done with it. I've never listened to any of our shows in the past, and... Until, I won't say anything. Chris wrote me and said, you left something. And I'm like, crap, I did leave something. So I got rid of something, and it will go back up later. And then Renee wrote and said, you left something out. And like, maybe I should listen to the show.
Maybe you should.
But anyway.
Cool. Right, thanks, guys.
All right, we'll see you. Buddy.
That was fun. Enjoyed that. I'll see you soon.
Mm-hmm. All right, and it is now time to go into some forum feedback. Hey, we need to develop a forum feedback sound. A little bit of forum feedback music.
Yes, we do. That sounds like a good idea. Now, I obviously know what the split of the workload for this particular podcast is. Uh-huh. So when you say we, you obviously mean yourself, Lou.
Yeah, I suppose.
Because you ain't going to get much out of me, I don't
think. Yeah. Something about get the toothpicks ready, guys, put them in your eyes, because it's now time for forum feedback. Hey, it made you laugh. That's good for me.
I don't think it's worthwhile asking if people hang around for forum feedback. I think it's much because what people will say is that the people that come forward and tell you are going to be a self-selecting group, and then those people aren't necessarily going to be representative, and they're also going to not particularly want to hurt your feelings or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I think we do need a proper scientific study as to whether or not people hang around for forum feedback. Or indeed, if we were able to have the information about what people did on their like iPhones or a computer when they were listening to the show. So at what point do people turn off or fast forward or skip? That would be interesting.
It would be, but I'll tell you my answer. I definitely listen to forum feedback if I've left something, because quite honestly, I like to see. We read them all. Okay, we read all forum feedback. We don't pick and choose. We don't skip lines. We don't skip paragraphs. We read it all. Sometimes we have to take a break.
We stutter.
We stutter. We take a break. We take a drink. Those are all taken out and edit. But the point is, I do, if I leave feedback, I do want to see if it gets put in. And quite honestly, I'm often upset when it's not, because it's like you're reading other people. Why the hell not just read all of them? Now, I guess if you get 35 of them, that could be a problem. But some of those 35 is back and forth stuff that you can avoid. But the original stuff that someone leaves, I believe if somebody took the time to write it, somebody needs to take the time to read it. So we, you know, and then you can only do so many of the forum that are on there now. So, like today, Carnivore J is our last person for Deja Q. After we've read this, well, if somebody adds on, of course, we're not going to add to later, because that would be an undertaking, trying to keep where we were in the forums, and then in future forums, go back and reread things that were added after they were originally read. That's unreasonable. But to not read stuff that, you know, that are there, to pick and choose, maybe this guy's funnier than this guy or something. I don't get that. So reread them all. But I don't know who does what I just suggested. It doesn't matter. We, you know, they're their own show. They're going to do what they want to do. And I'm talking about things that are both in and out of Trekmate, but it's not relevant. Deja Q. Let's start with, do you want to do the voice of Kieran McDuff yet? You want to try it?
No, I do not. No.
Kieran McDuff.
I don't make funny voices of people.
Oh, geez. After all I just said about what we do for our people, I just chop up Kieran McDuff. Oh, anyway, so this is Kieran McDuff when he used to leave feedback.
Oh. He'll be back. He'll be back. Don't worry. He'll be back.
Well, I hope so, because I'm getting a little worried here. Okay, he said... No, question mark?
Oh, no. He doesn't say that. You have to go to the one underneath that, because he should start with Q, 5 stars. And then the rest makes sense.
So how did that get... Oh, oops. Copy and paste from my notes.
It's Q, on the first line. 5 stars. No?
No, that makes sense. No? Okay, Q, 5 stars. No! Yes. Okay, I'll take this seriously, because we all know not everything with Q in it gets 5 stars. Q-less, for example. First, let's clear off the distraction so we can talk about Q. I never thought the science around the moon falling out of orbit was all that bad. Yes, there's pieces of nonsense in there, but for the most part, it's reasonable, though. Enough. As James said, it's incidental, so we can more or less ignore it. Lou brought up the point about how quickly the evacuation would take place. I don't think it's all that easy, actually. Even with transporter technology, you'd be lining up to get beamed to another location. We see it on the Enterprise if they have to evacuate the ship with people queuing to enter a transporter room. It's all very orderly, but time-consuming. And obviously, that's just around 1,000 people with the number of transporter rooms they can access. Imagine trying to move an entire cities of people. And that's a very good point, I suppose. I was just thinking like massive transporters, cargo transporters, where you can line up 30, 40. But I guess that would be way too much pattern of humans to, or people, I don't say humans, people, to be able to rearrange all those molecules if you have more than, say, 5 or so.
Let me ask you a question, Lou. Is there a limit on how large a thing you can transport?
I would say no, because they were able to transport the Delta Flyer. I mean, I know they had transport enhancers out of that rock, but still the point is they can transport the entire Delta Flyer, every single wire on board, the people on board, being Paris, Tuvok, and Ensign Wildman. So, I don't know. That's a good point. And then, I believe, wasn't there a point where Voyager was also transported into something? The entire ship. All of its intricate details.
I think Enterprise was in Enterprise.
Yeah.
You know, the NX-01. That was like a big whale ship that it sat in for a while.
That could be.
I seem to remember that.
Yeah, that might be so.
Oh, what was that episode called? I can't remember. It was like a season two episode where they, you know, they ended up in the belly of another ship.
But I thought they flew into that. The ship just overtook them and, you know, consumed them while it was traveling faster than the Enterprise.
I mean, possibly. I will need to rewatch. But I suppose, you know,
the Kranum. It was the Voth. Do you remember when distant origin theory?
Okay, yeah.
I think that's when the Voth transported the entire Voyager into itself and held it captive. The city ship. I'm pretty certain of that. I don't know for sure, but I don't know, Ben. You should know. So when you give your 5-star rating for today's episode, why don't you let us know? Okay, he goes on to say, maybe I'm thinking about this because I recently finished reading one of those DS9 relaunch novels where they needed to evacuate a whole colony in a very quick time. They covered the logistics of it pretty well in that book, and it was very much involved and had the benefit of the Iconian portals and all. So that's another interesting question, the Iconian portal. If people just ran through the portal, do they still have to go one by one so they can properly get there, or can they jump together, just keep running? That's a good question. Okay, let's focus on Q, he says. Just what did Q do to get booted out? I've thought about this, and specifically the ordering of the episodes. Remember at the end of Hide and Q, Q is forcibly recalled by the Continuum after he takes Riker's powers away again. Yet, nothing ever comes out of that, and then he returns in Q Who. But now he turns up having been in trouble. Did they consider Deja Q after hiding Q? But had to fit Q Who in to introduce the Borg first. I jumbled myself. What's he meaning?
Well, I think he's just trying to place the individual of Q and his kind of story arc, and whether or not it naturally follows on from the events from Hiding Q, or whether it naturally follows on from Q Who. And I think the point is that he thinks it fits better as if you assume it's if it comes from Hiding Q, so effectively he gets reprimanded after the events in Hiding Q, but suggests that obviously there is this other episode in between, and maybe that was something that they kind of had to do in order to, you know, to do the Borg plot, but they might not have wanted to get Q from a kind of linear time perspective, kind of, you know, brought in at that point.
Okay, so yeah, let me think here. Hiding Q, when it comes to all the Q names, I'm trying to remember what they were all about. So I'm looking up Q now.
Okay, Hiding Q is the horrendous one in season one when he gives Riker the power of the Q.
Right.
And they're on the battlefield with Napoleon, and it's awful.
Right, and I thought maybe that's why he was in trouble. But again, he comes back for Q Who. And it just seems like another day at the office for Q.
Yeah, I kind of always got the impression that the reason why he got into trouble was kind of just something else on the side that we don't necessarily have to know all the details of.
He impregnated an alien, maybe. It's a better good as reason of any. Okay, let's go back to Kieran. He says, my head canon around this issue would be that he was given a last chance after hiding Q and wasted that dealing with someone else. That seems reasonable, right? Sounds good. They don't explain it. And while I would like them to have done so, it's also rather incidental. I love the idea that Data helping Q with his experiences was basically a child leading a child. I think it's a great analogy, but I also think it's more than that. It was the outside view of humanity showing an outsider to humanity what it means to be human. Star Trek does that, does this navel gazing through a third party a lot. But this was one of the better ways of doing it. Do you want a bad one? Try the comic from the outrageous Okona. Amen, brother. Lou makes a great point about Geordi being a dick in this episode. It should definitely become a trope because he does this every so often. If someone in his engineering and trying to help out, but it wasn't what Geordi wants to do, then he'll be a real dick about it. Q gets it. Leah Brahms gets it. Reg Barkley gets it. Scotty! Oh, I hated that one. Scotty gets it. Geordi was very possessive of his engineering section, so we should definitely keep track of it, and you'll see how often it happens. Yeah, side tangent. When he mistreats Scotty, I just want to crawl through the screen and beat the shit out of him. And I'll...
So, Lou, when did we stop becoming a family-friendly podcast?
Well, don't worry. I know how to use the bleep thing. But I did. That, for some reason, I was very protective of Scotty in that episode, but we'll get there. Anyway, unless there's something else you want to say on that.
No.
All right. This episode was great fun. It was well-paced. There's reasonable enough problems for both the crew to solve in both the planet and with Q. And I love that one makes the other more difficult. I even thought the ending was well balanced. I really like how Data was given just a laugh, and Q said as much as it was a gift rather than the curse of being human. He gave him a little taste, enough to say, thank you. I agree that making him human for a short space of time may have been more fun, but given where we were in the episode, timing... it was best to have a short burst of laughter and no more. Anything else would have turned the Q episode into more of a Data episode than just him assisting Q. We probably would have got too bogged down in the Data trying to convince Q to make it permanent too. I don't know if that's necessarily true any more than I got tired of Odo being a human storyline. And was very thankful Odo was brought back to a shapeshifter. What about you? That's why I was thinking, you know, they had a few episodes where Odo was human because that was his punishment. So I think in the end, Data being human, I could see a couple episodes out of that. And Data deciding this being human thing isn't all that it's cracked up to be, and they find a way for Q to bring him back to an android.
Well, I mean, we discussed in Offspring, and the Offspring was, you know, he almost used the lines that, you know, it's not the destination that's important, with, you know, it's the struggle that you go through in order to attempt to get there, and I think that that's really what you want, you know, not necessarily in life, by the way, although sometimes it does work in life as well, but certainly when we're talking about drama, I actually don't think you really want these characters to get to where they want to be from an arc perspective necessarily. You certainly don't want to live with them after they've achieved that. So it's very often the case that you'll have two people that, you know, will they or won't they get together? And then as soon as they get together, then it becomes disinteresting. And I would go as far as saying that you certainly shouldn't have ever had Data as a human. I don't think you wanted Data with the emotion chip either. I think that there's, you know, of course you want growth in the character, but I don't think you need these little trinkets to be to be wrapped around Data as somehow, you know, him making progress, because you effectively, Data's special and he stops being special when he gets turned into a human. Mm-hmm. And I think the situation with Odo was different in the sense that he was taken down a peg, so Odo was still different when he was a human, and it was punishment for him. So it was effectively him serving his time. But you know, you certainly shouldn't be looking at elevating Data to human level, in my mind. despite the fact that I love Data, I want him to succeed. It's just that the drama just stops at that point.
Yeah. And I do agree with you. Outside Star Trek, let's take Big Bang Theory, for example. Once Howard Wolowitz got married, that changed the paradigm of the entire series, because he was always that, you know, goofy, hopeless nerd who thought he was God's gift to women, only, you know, he was really perverted and useless. And now he's married. That took a lot of the comedy away from it. And now they went and did the same thing with Leonard. Leonard married Penny. That chase was much more valuable than him winning her. The off and again, on and again relationship they had. So I think Big Bang Theory is probably going to be winding down because they took the heart of the show and changed it. And so I think you're right. Making Data human was a bad idea. But at least, I don't know, I still think that, you know, let him feel it for a while. Let him have a bad bowel movement and decide that, no, being an android is much better. Or what I went through 3 weeks ago with the kidney stone. I don't know if I told you about that. Let him have a kidney stone. You know, and then he could say, crap, no, no.
So you're suggesting that... So in this particular episode, Data was useful to Q, and he said, oh, you know, Data, you know, my parting gift, you know, here's a bit of laughter. In the following episode, he's going to be a bit of a foil for Q. He's going to go, Data, nah, you got me again, but, you know, I'm going to get you back. Here's the experience of passing a kidney stone.
Exactly.
And that's going to be, you're then going to have like a 30-second scene as Data's in the on the floor in pain.
Right.
I don't know. I don't necessarily think that it's that this omnipotent being should be turning people into humans for the purpose of passing kidney stones.
Yeah. You know, being human isn't all ice cream sundaes and Romulan ales, but okay. All right. Sorry, Kieran. Let's go back to your stuff here. As with most Q episodes, there were some great lines throughout this episode. Q, as usual, supplied most of them, but Worf's suggestion that he should die to prove he's mortal was probably the best of all. Guinan's stabbing was probably sufficient, though. And I'm going to add to that, saying why Guinan didn't end up in the brig, I'm stunned about, because it was still an assault. But maybe Q wasn't going to press charge. Okay, he says, great to hear Chris and Ben on the podcast. They're always great fun, and this was an ideal episode for them to be on. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised as it descended into madness. I mean, day of sex machina. Who's having sex with the machine? Tasha, Tasha, Tasha. Actually, that's not as creepy as some of the Wesley and Porthos stuff, and I'll admit, I don't remember that. But he ended it with, get out! Get out of there! Get out! So apparently there's stuff in his head that he's now trying to excise. And I'm sure I'm not making it any better. Oh, you haven't done Search for Spock yet. Never mind. He says, I'm getting out of this review anyway. 5 stars. Love the episode. And then he says, hey, look at that. I could have just stuck with the one-liner.
I mean, I lost that thread about a paragraph and a half ago. Okay, it's great to have feedback. Mm. Thank you, Kieran.
Yes, it does. It's good stuff. And Ben thanked him too. And I think you may have said something nice, and then I may have said something nice. And okay, let's go on to Endicore.
Yes, sure. So this episode turned Q, the omnipotent and omniscient super being representing a millennia-old super-advanced civilization, into the equivalent of a 6-year-old child who likes to pull wings off flies. I do not understand who thought that was a good idea. I liked Q prior to this episode. He was a great foil for early season Picard, showing that no matter how far 24th century humanity had advanced, there was still a long way to go. He played a fantastic role as a guide in Q Who. Above all, Q was always represented as seriously threatening without being malicious. I always imagined there was some absolute moral code, that Q followed, necessitated by their omnipotent powers, and their society having developed for millennia longer than ours. How am I supposed to take Q seriously when they have all the maturity of little children? Q's judgment of Picard and humanity no longer has a leg to stand on, since Q was apparently as grievously savage to the Calamarians as he was accused humanity to have ever been. Instead of treating him seriously, Picard just has to take out a pacifier and a rattle and wait until the cosmic toddler gets tired of playing with his favourite starship and moves on to his next toy. I find the only way I can enjoy all good things is to forget about this episode existing. Mm-hmm. Now, actually, I wasn't down on this episode at all, but I do acknowledge, I think that Endicott does have some, he has a very valid point here. I think that maybe it's systematic that of, frankly, I think when Q comes in, I think, you know, the beginning and the end, so in terms of Encounter at Farpoint, and All Good Things, you do see Q in this kind of a very almost an official role. It's almost as if he is the guy that has been sent in order to make sure that humanity gets, you know, properly taken care of or tested or whatever it happens to be. In many other cases, I think you do fall into this idea that Q is what Q needs to be for that episode, and you know, it that's not necessarily a bad thing per se. Because I think you end up with Q being, you know, you end up Q being the guide and Q who. But you are right, in this episode, Q is, you know, he is kind of, you know, the little boy. And to a certain extent, I do think that he had a similar situation with hiding Q as well. Where, you know, you didn't quite have that same kind of a kind of moral standing or moralizing that you saw in that. In Encounter at Farpoint. Again, when you come into another great episode like Tapestry with Q, he is very much very, very similar to Q Who in terms of being a guide, but he's, you know, instead of it being like a larger guide for the Federation, and it's much more of a personal story with him and Picard. So, I think that Endicott certainly does have valid points here. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let me roll on. For some bizarre reason, the writers decided that Q needed character growth, which would be impossible if the Q are near perfect. So Q's character had to be torn down to the ground so that he too could come to worship at the altar of humanity. Usually I don't mind when an alien decides how amazing humanity is, but must this happen every time and for an omniscient character too? And that's ever-knowing or knowable character. Besides, our hero's behavior doesn't score humanity any points. Picard acts annoyed, even though in their last encounter, Q saved the ship and Picard was thankful for warning them about the Borg. This episode really feels like it should have come on the heels of Hiding Clue, and we're supposed to forget Q Who. But I can't do that since Q Who is my second favorite TNG episode. Mm. As for the other characters, Riker is completely callous to Hugh's fate. Worf is downright bellicose, Crusher is crude, Geordi is dismissive and condescending, and Guinan is outright physically assaults him. How the mighty have fallen. Tell that to yourself, Guinan, as security throws you into the brig. The only one that is compassionate to Q is the android still learning about humanity. My God, how far everyone has fallen since season one.
Yeah, good point.
The entire plot of a superhero being stripped of his powers so they might learn a valuable lesson in humility, kindness, selflessness, sacrifice, etc., and be gifted their powers back is only slightly better than the mirror opposite storyline of a human acquiring superpowers only to abuse them, losing the powers, and then learning to live the rest of their lives as a mortal. Really, by the time Q2 turns up in the shuttle, I was waiting for this episode to end. But no. We get a mariachi band on the bridge of the Enterprise. This is the only instance in the entirety of Star Trek where I simply couldn't suspend my disbelief. It might have been the top-down camera angle they chose for that scene, combined with the crew shifting around uncomfortably and looking at the floor in annoyance and mild frustration. But the actors' reactions looked exactly like in the TNG blooper reels when Michael Dorn messes up his lines. Patrick Stewart would shake his head disappointedly. Jonathan Frakes would shift from one leg to another. Everyone would sigh, realizing they were really working late that day. Mm-hmm. And I could no longer see the characters, just the tired actors in costumes thinking about going home and starting dinner. Mm-hmm. The super stereotypical mariachi band felt really out of place on Star Trek. I have to wonder, who were they? Were the three of them part of the same band? If so, did they get bussed in together, or did they arrive on the set separately? How did they get chosen to appear on Star Trek? Did they get to talk to the main cast at all, if even a few words? Did they care that they're on Star Trek, or at least the producers? Q didn't bring a rap group onto the bridge of the Enterprise. Oh, and let's not forget the B-plot of the moon falling into Burrell 4. Casualty-wise, this might be the largest imminent disaster presented in TNG, in a TNG episode so far, possibly except for Pen Pals. Yet it's relegated to the background of a Q comedy episode. There are millions of lives at stake, yet I'm supposed to care more about an annoying toddler getting his superpowers back. The only reason those poor aliens are even in this episode is so that Q can snap his fingers and repay his debts to the Enterprise before the end credits so that we all don't have to worry about continuity. About the only positive aspect was Q's interaction with Data. Ben was right to call them both children, but the difference is that Data is childlike, whereas Q is childish. Hmm. Two aliens discussing humanity is Trek's vision of navel gazing, but it's still fresh and interested at this point in Trek's run. Data laughing was likewise a highlight. This episode is a character assassination that can only be rivaled by the Enterprise's A Night in Sickbay. I found Q far too annoying to be funny and the plot way too predictable to be enjoyable. Instead of making me sympathise with Q, I wanted to slap him and tell him that he's better than this. John Delancey's acting is the very best, but this episode would get, but all this episode would get from me is a 2 out of 5. So, no, Lou, you don't have to show me the door. I'll let myself out.
Mm-mm. You don't have to go anywhere.
Okay. We sat down and we had a good time reviewing this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But everything in that post is well argued and perfectly legitimate. But I still enjoyed the episode.
Yeah, you gave it a 5.
I did. It was so much fun.
And I've been doing my best to find out who this mariachi band is. I know on Memory Alpha it says, according to Jerry Sackman, the three members were a mariachi band in real life. But I'm still trying to find out who they were while you were talking. So, okay, so, Chris, Mr. J, Mr. Carnivore J, says, wow. I never saw it as a character assassination, but of course I never really connected with Q who in that way either. I'm going to have to dig deep and formulate a true character synopsis for what I view Q as now, so I can see if this episode really does harm his portrayal all that much. Good news is, yesterday's Enterprise is very close, so any ill will endangered by this episode should be swiftly swept away. Thanks to a really good story. And he did that on October 22nd. Oh, well, see, okay, there we go. I was going to say, and gee, at this time, he didn't know that he was going to be on yesterday's Enterprise. But that's not true. He had already recorded yesterday's Enterprise. So, he knew a little bit of what was going on. Good preview, Chris. And that was Deja Q. And now let me go back to Google, because I'm still trying to find out who is a mariachi band. But I don't think we'll ever get to know that.
It's one of the great mysteries of life.
Yes. Maybe in the future we'll announce that if we ever figure out who they are. But they were called Q's Mariachi Band all around. So I don't know who they were. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. And I am curious who listens to the entire forum feedback. Do you listen to it? And if so, why? Do you like listening to it? Or are you like me where you leave a message you want to see if it gets played? Let us know. I'm curious. And good night.
I always listen to the forum feedback on other shows. But good night, everyone.
Okay. Goodbye.